podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Whistleblowers is back for the final stretch of a grueling season. Today, we'll be talking about all the games from the weekend just gone, including Man City effectively winning the league title with a chillingly professional display at Everton, Arsenal doing that classic Spurs thing of forgetting how to play like Arsenal, and we say a sad goodbye to Southampton, the first club to be confirmed as relegated. All that plus more with me, Mark Smith, and Gareth Dobson. Gareth, hello.
Well, hello, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. You're a Spurs fan. Let's get that out of the way straight away. Yes. Pretty good weekend for you then.
If you're a very myopic Spurs fan, but I think even the most generous of spirited would have, breathed a little sigh of relief.
Yeah, that's fair to say. You can be bitter on here. You can be small-minded on here. I am every week.
Thanks. I try to hide it for the interest of balance, but you know, it does feel like a bit of equilibrium in North London has been restored. Everyone's a bit sad.
Yeah, I think that's the best place to start, though, this week. We'll talk about Man City in a minute, although I don't think there's that much to talk about with them. I think it's just sort of a terrifying procession with them in the last 2 months of every season. So let's start with Arsenal instead. I'm not going to say they bottled it. We talked about this loads of times over the last 6 weeks. They haven't bottled anything. They're up against a horrible nightmare in Man City. But they have shown that they've got players that don't quite have the experience in these big, big pressure games. And ultimately, they've dropped too many points in the last 5 weeks. Is that something that they'll be worried about for next season? Do you think they're already starting to build for next season? Or do you think this could be a case of players being mentally scarred from this over the next sort of 6 to 12 months?
It's really hard to tell. And I know that's not the most helpful of answers. I think that, these players have overexceeded expectations, and if they can build on this, then they'll be in good stead. But there's always that suspicion that when you really sort of climb the heights 1 year, then the next year that it's going to be that much harder. I mean, you kind of assume that a lot of the players played to their optimum level. People like Xhaka, if he can do that again, I'd be quite surprised. I think there probably is some more to come from some of them. Saliba's growing into his role, and Gabriel Jesus, I think, can still be better, a bit more consistent, can stay fit. It's really difficult. I genuinely don't know the answer to it. I mean, you've got Liverpool and Chelsea coming up. You would kind of expect, if Manchester United can continue the project, as they love to say, then it always seems to get harder every year. My suspicion is that Arsenal will not be in the top two next year, but that's not a criticism. That's just kind of accepting the way it is.
Oh, the strength of the league is ridiculous. But also next season, they will spend money in the summer. I'm pretty sure about that. And I'm sure they'll add quality. Arteta's strike rate has been pretty good, really. But they have got to contend with Champions League football next year, which they haven't had to do this season, which is obviously a blessing and a curse. Because I think this Arsenal side are brilliant. We've talked about it all season. I think they're a really brilliant side. But I think there was a sense that 5 or 6 weeks ago, having talked to Arsenal fans and pundits or whatever, the feeling was that if they didn't do it this year, it might be a little wait again. Because like you say, the competition is so strong. And with Champions League football next season, it's a real difficult one. Now, you mentioned Xhaka a second ago, where he's somebody that you would imagine could be upgraded on reasonably, not easily, but it seems like a more straightforward thing. His ceiling isn't as high as some of the other players in that squad. So let's assume Xhaka is a given. Where else are you strengthening that first team of Arsenal? Forget about the squad for a minute. The first team.
Probably. So agree with Xhaka. I think that the other obvious one maybe is up front. I think they could. I think they probably aren't going to get anywhere further unless they can bring in a world-class forward.
You don't think Jesus is that guy?
No, I think he's a really, really good player and potentially a fantastic complementary player. But I think Arsenal kind of need that main man still. Gabriel Jesus.
Why do you think that, though? Just given that we've seen that Arteta is very much a disciple of Guardiola, and Guardiola won the league at least two seasons without a striker.
Yeah, I mean, but
with Jesus as the guy.
No, but I think he was constantly looking to upgrade or replace him. You know, Gabriel Jesus, you know, kind of played second fiddle to Aguero for a while. I think Guardiola tried as hard as he could to make Gabriel Jesus the pivotal player in that attack, and eventually, I think he just decided it wasn't to be, and he moved him on to Arsenal's benefit. But I don't think he's the sort of player who's going to drag them on. I think he can take them to a certain level.
Yeah, and also he's got that issue with not a great bill of health. I mean, he's been out for a decent chunk of this season. He's missed quite large stretches of other seasons as well. And as plenty of teams have seen in the league this season, you need to have availability as a first team player. I mean, that sounds obvious. But when you look at the greatest players in history, you like the likes of Ronaldo and Messi, their availability is absolutely off the charts. They're never injured. They're never ill. They're always there. And that's, I think, you know, talk about consistency. That's the big one, isn't it?
No, agreed. And I think, you know, there's a fun saying in American sport, the best ability is availability. But that's, there is a strong element of truth. I mean, I think Man City have been quite blessed with injuries this year. Haaland has barely missed the game. He's been rested once. I think there was one game he was out this last month injured. But even when you look at players like Grealish, they don't seem to have missed time. They seem to have come on Rodri. And Arsenal are going to, like you said, that they're going to be really stretched next year. And to rely on, you know, essentially it feels like four attackers, Odegaard, Martinelli, Saka and Gabriel Jesus it got them through this year. It won't get them through next year, especially when your backup is Nketiah, who I think, you know, looks good in flashes, but is clearly not the finished article.
Yeah, Nketiah is a good player. Likewise, Reece Nelson, good player. But yeah, you don't feel like they can just slot in seamlessly and maintain that standard, do you? Well, one of the players in that Brighton side that beat them so comfortably yesterday at the Emirates is Caicedo. Caicedo? What are you going with?
I'm going to go with Caicedo.
Caicedo. All right. Didn't give you that option, but you've gone off-piste. I think he is a genuinely fantastic talent. I know they're talking about a big price of 60, 70 million quid. I think he's worth it. He was very heavily linked with Arsenal in January, and it led to him signing a new contract at Brighton. He's the sort of player I think could come in and revolutionise that midfield. And we'll talk about this later on, Brighton generally, but Brighton is such a well-run club. They have such foresight when it comes to recruitment, both at, you know, coach level, manager level, player level, all across the club seems to be that they are specifically buying or recruiting players, managers, coaches who fit into the current system, right? In a way that most clubs aren't doing it. Brentford maybe do it a little bit, but Brighton do that specifically. And as we saw with Yves Bissouma at your club, Spurs, he looked $1 million, well, $45 million at Brighton. And yet, when you take a player like that, who's used to that system, has been brought in for a specific reason, it doesn't just mean they're a good player that can play anywhere. And I think that there's a risk with this, or with all these Brighton players that are getting sort of hailed as the second coming. And Caicedo could just be another one of those, couldn't he? Albeit, let me just clarify that by saying I do think he's a phenomenal player, and I think he maybe is a cut above everything else they've got.
Yeah, the other obvious one is Cucurella, who went to Chelsea, and
I forgot about him.
It's not gone well for a million reasons. It's probably hard to judge him, but you know, clubs look at this, and the counter argument is, but he could be our Kante, who excelled and looked so good at Leicester, was so good at Leicester, and Mahrez as well. Mm-hmm. And they say, well, you know, it does work both ways. You know, these players, we can, when you put them in a better team, quote unquote, then they can push themselves to an even higher limit. And I guess that's the unknowable element of it all. And that's the excitement when your player brings that in. You know, when I heard that Spurs were signing Yves Bissouma, I was convinced he was the missing piece.
Same.
He was the last bit of the puzzle. Yeah, you know, he might still be next year. I think that he was one of those ones that didn't necessarily fit into Conte's view of what a midfielder needed to be. But you know, it's already a big question mark, and they're very expensive. And I mean, I agree. I think Caicedo is a extremely good player who I think has now proved it maybe over a couple of seasons. Someone like Mitoma, who looks incredibly exciting and really fun, technically brilliant. I think you'd probably want to see it for another year at Brighton before you start whacking on the massive price tags. But you know, you do wonder if they'll come point, you know, if those two move on and they're not as good as they are for Brighton, will people start looking at Brighton going, well, maybe we shouldn't be paying the overinflated costs for someone we're not incredibly sure is going to work out.
Yeah, that's true. But should we talk about Brighton's performance yesterday? Did you see the game at Arsenal? Because for me, that was one of the best performances I've seen of any side this season in the league. Certainly Brighton's best performance, and I've seen a lot of them this season, particularly given that it came straight after that 5-1 home loss to Everton. I thought everything they did yesterday, Brighton, was perfect. Just everything from front to back. I just cannot remember enjoying a team's performance as much as I did yesterday. And I'm sure you must have enjoyed it for other reasons, but just from a football point of view, how impressed were you?
I mean, they're so good. I think maybe Arsenal was the perfect matchup for them. A team they can essentially go toe-to-toe with. They both have systems, and it was almost like, okay, which system's going to work? Which set of players is going to, you know, carry out the instructions perfectly on the day? And it was Brighton. And I think that there's still a disconnect between us saying how good Brighton are and people, I think, actually realizing quite how good they are. People will talk about, I suspect, you know, in this very sort of polarized media world we live in, it's like, oh, when Arsenal absolutely, you know, lost it to Brighton, they went there, they screwed the pooch. And it's like, firstly, Arsenal lost it with that run of you know, draws at Anfield, West Ham, and then going to City and not holding on. And it's definitely doing Brighton service. It's similar to, I'm going to surprise you here and bring it back to Spurs. When Spurs drew Chelsea 2-2, the Battle of the Bridge and all that, and you know, it's like, oh, Spurs imploded and lost the title that night. It's like Spurs had essentially lost the title before they went there, which is why they went mental. But it's a much cleaner narrative to pick out one game with a slight eye-popping either scoreline or series of situations. Like, well, that was the moment. Unfortunately for Arsenal, they'd lost the title before Brighton. That was probably the sign of a team sort of just being like, you know what, we know what the moment was.
It was Xhaka squaring up to Trent at Liverpool.
It possibly 2-0
up and kicking him off.
Sliding doors style.
Yeah.
I think
we'd probably do a reboot of that film. And I think Xhaka could do it. I think
he's got the chops.
Yeah, I think he has. Look, I think Brighton were brilliant. And I think that De Zerbi, we'll get onto De Zerbi after the break. But De Zerbi, the bravery he showed in being 1-0 up at the Emirates, bearing in mind it's a high-pressure game for Brighton as well because they're still in the hunt for European football. And for him to make the sort of offensive substitutions that he did, I think a lot of managers, I'd say, you know, half the managers in the league, three-quarters of them maybe, would have gone, right, we've got to defend this now, and would have brought on a midfielder to shore things up. And instead, he takes off, he brings on Undav, and he takes off, I can't think of who it was now, but he didn't go into the trap that so many people fall into of bringing on a defensive midfielder, making everyone sit 10 yards deeper, and just inviting pressure at the Emirates with half an hour left. And I found that so impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that even though he's only been there for a relatively short amount of time, I think it shows a manager who understands his players and the makeup of his squad. They're not a particularly brilliant defensive outfit. And it's like, well, why, you know, push all your chips into the side of the table marked hang on for dear life when you realize what you've got as an attacking entity and be like, okay, well, let's go with what suits us.
But again, yes, of course, De Zerbi is doing a great job, but it also speaks to the recruitment in that club because he's not been there very long. You're right. He took over from Potter, who'd done a great job, but recruitment has gone and got a manager who they know can fit in with those players and play a style of football that suits them. It's not a coincidence. This is all part of a much broader plan, I think, that Brighton have and are doing it beautifully. And again, I'm sure we'll talk about this after the break, but for the same reasons as Bissouma going to Spurs didn't quite work out, De Zerbi could be another Potter at another club. You know, we don't know. We have got no idea. As great as it looked yesterday and as brave as those subs were and the tactical tweaks were brilliant, it's because it's geared towards this whole. They see things much more clearly, much more as a, you know, they're zooming out and having a proper look and then not just pulling the trigger on. They've got I can imagine at Brighton and at Brentford and a few other clubs, they've got, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 year plans, 10 year plans. And you look at other clubs, your club being one of them, I think Man United being another one, I think Chelsea certainly being one of them, who have not got a fucking clue, Gareth. They are living day to day.
No, absolutely. They have 1 or 2 year plans and they pay lip service to this idea that they're looking long term, but medium term at best. I mean, realistically, if Manchester United were sitting seventh right now, I think there'd be a lot of speculation about, oh, maybe it's time to move on. You know, they brought a manager who, you know, who's come from a lower league. They tried it. They need to, but, and you know, if next season United are a fifth or even fourth again, those, you know, drumbeats will start up again. And Brighton, I think, as well as being brilliantly run, as well as having long-term vision, are in that sweet spot right now where they're punching above their weight, but also they're not quite at that point where there's a level of expectation to go on, keep push on. You can do better, right? You need to make the big move now. This is it. And if they repeat this next year, if they even, you know, let's say they're sitting fifth or sixth and really looking at Champions League football next year, then it'll be interesting to see whether the hand stays as steady, whether they, you know, they double down to chuck in another poker analogy, or whether they just say, this is our lot in life and we absolutely love it.
I feel like they are very, very self-aware. They know what they are as a club, i.e. they're not going to be competing with Chelsea, United, Liverpool, Man City, whatever. And I think they realise that they can trust their recruitment to such an extent that they can just be a selling club. And it's not going to affect necessarily the way that they can progress. Anyway, we're overrunning. We'll take a break, after which we'll talk about Man City and the relegation scrap, which has taken its first scalp. See you in a minute. Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. It's me, Mark Smith, alongside Gareth Dobson. Gareth, we've talked about Arsenal. You're obviously delighted by that. Let's talk about Man City. Let's keep it brief, though, because I feel like there's... I don't think there's that much to say about City, to be honest. Did you watch the game against Everton?
I watched until the first goal went in. And at that point, it's... Well, firstly, I had to do some chores. But so you know what's going to happen.
What chores did you have to do?
I did a very late mowing of the lawn.
Yeah, so did I. I did it. Yeah. I reckon I did it exactly the same time as you. I did it in the second half of that game.
Just two of us pacing up and down our lawn like a sort of mechanized version of Roy Keane with Triggs.
Yeah, it's just dad chat. This is dad FM, and I'm proud of it. But I think a lot of people are doing the lawn at that point, because once Man City go a goal up, I know this is wrong, because we've been proven wrong in the past, but they are so good at keeping hold of their leads, especially in this last 5 or 6 weeks of the season. I don't feel like I was going to miss too much. I caught up later on, of course I did, but I just felt so confident. I wonder what it's like supporting a team that you can be that confident in.
There's probably an entire 12-part series on what it is to be a Man City fan. I think they get a lot of pelters for maybe not being the most passionate fans of the world, but if you're sitting there every week and your team just...
You're going to get spoiled. Yeah. It's not your fault.
You're going to get spoiled, and it must be fun. It's, you know, actually, I'm not sure it's fun. I think it might be grimly satisfying. I remember, you know, in that period where Spurs were pushing hard at the top of the table, you stopped kind of in relishing each victory as this hard-fought thing. You're like, okay, we won, great, right? What's the next fixture? We got to win the next one.
Yeah, it's just relief. It's only ever relief. There's no enjoyment.
Yeah, it's like, and that's kind of, yeah, and I know OWO is another 90-odd football clubs. So I love in that position, but it is a strange thing how quickly things change. When you are a team that wins consistently, you become more afraid of losing than you are excited by winning.
Is Ilkay Gundogan the best, I'm going to use an American expression here, like you did earlier in the first half, is he the best clutch player in the league?
I love the word clutch.
I feel like he, in big games, big moments, certainly at the business end of the season, he becomes another player entirely. He's scored crucial goals every season for the last 5-6 seasons, and the game against Everton on Sunday, another perfect example of that.
I think we forget quite how long he's been there as well. He was one of Guardiola's first kind of recruits. You know, he clearly brought him in because he felt that he understood the requirements of his game, and he's been he has been consistent. He probably is now averaging, what, maybe less than 20 league games a season. But he seems to have these major contributions. He had that incredible spell, was it 2-3 years ago, where he was probably their best player that year and weighed in with a crazy amount of goals, especially from midfield. But I think he's going to move on in the summer. That's certainly what it sounds like. Is his contract up, perhaps? And
contract's up, yeah. I think they'll be mad to let him go.
Yeah.
Pay the guy what he wants. Pay him what he wants. And like you say, play him 20 games a season. Play him the important games.
And maybe the most astonishing thing is that, I mean, he almost lost his career to like 2 years of injuries.
Yeah.
And there's also, you know, when he was at Dortmund, and, you know, I mean, potentially he is as good as he was ever meant to be, but potentially he could have been an even better player, or we missed some of his early prime.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I think one of the things with this Man City side that gets overlooked is the mental fortitude they have. They're not worried about going into the trenches with teams if they have to. You know, they've got these 3 or 4 or 5 centre backs now, one of whom John Stones now playing central midfield, unbelievably, and doing a great job of it. But they've got defenders who want to defend. Akanji's been great this season. Ake's been really good when he's played. Laporte, we know about him. We know about Diaz. They have got a stable of unbelievable centre-backs. And when you compare them to what we saw with Arsenal and the Kiwior, is that how you say it?
I'm not entirely sure.
Let's go with Kiwior for now.
Yeah.
But what he did for the first goal against Brighton, I just can't imagine any Man City player doing that. And I know this makes me sound like Graham Souness or Roy Keane, but you can't be on the floor holding your ankle when there's an attack above your head. You can't. The only way that you get away with that if you've got a serious injury. And for my money, if I've done what Kiwior did there and they've scored, there is no chance I'm going to be seen sprinting in the next 10 minutes. I'm going to be on the floor for as long as it takes to get an air ambulance out. And then I'm going to pretend I'm badly injured for the rest of the season. Because that is, to me, completely humiliating. And I don't think you get that with any Man City player.
You missed the phrase, in our league.
Men.
In our league. That's not acceptable. You cannot have that. No, but I agree. And I think that it's that no matter how old they are or how many games they've played, everyone at Man City seems like seasoned footballers, experienced.
Absolutely.
They understand what's required. Like you said, I think there is a still to them that, you know, I think because they're seen as this very technically gifted team and they, you know, I don't want to say tiki-taka, but there you go. It's just like that you equate that with being a bit soft or a bit like,
right.
It goes down easy. But, you know, they're a pretty complete football team.
They can all mix it up. Sorry, go on.
And what they enjoy, like, you know, Jack Grealish gets kicked more than any other footballer in our league. but I think that... And I think they'll show that because my suspicion is that they're going to win the Champions League this year as well.
Big shout.
Finally. Big shout.
But why not? I mean, why not? There's no reason why not. And listen, we know where we stand on all the off-field issues. I think we're both on the same page with that. And I think at some point it will all come to light and they'll get the deductions or get whatever. But from a purely football point of view, they are an unbelievable side. And like you say, they can do it all. Even their tiny, tiny little players, even Bernardo Silva, he's a little shit. And that's what I want. That's what I want. You need him to be like that. You
don't have anyone in there. And he's one that fans love the most. It's always the ones with the edge.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's the City love-in finished for this week. I'm sure we'll talk about them again next week. In the meantime, though, let's talk about the other end of the table. Southampton, a team that I think we both quite like, have finally succumbed to relegation. Why has it happened now, Gareth? Talk me through it.
A disastrous mid-season manager's change. Necessarily that they made the change, but to whom they made it to. And then I think the biggest issue is they decided to go for this very callow, youthful set of signings that, you know, I'm sure they convinced us we're going to sign all these sort of really exciting prospects and bring a couple of Man City youth players in and, you know, we're gonna be Brighton. They've kind of been a semi-prototype Brighton for a long time. You know, you could argue that they've lasted longer in the Premier League than anyone, bringing in this idea of bringing players through, selling them on, changing managers quickly, having a system.
Very successful.
Very successful on balance, but also I think it shows that how precarious this idea is, because you have one set of wrong moves over, you know, 1 to 2 seasons, and then suddenly you look at your team like, what is this collection of players? And unfortunately, I think that's kind of where Southampton are. The recruitment, which has generally been good and solid, just ran out of steam for a couple of years.
Yeah, it's a strange one, isn't it? Because you look at the players they've got there, and I think there are 3, 4, maybe 5 players that will be picked up immediately by teams, obviously above Southampton, because they're bottom of the league. But, you know, 13th, 12th upwards even. I think they've got some really, really good individuals.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't help when you have 3 managers in the season, one of whom is absolutely out of his depth immediately. The first one of which, in Hasenhüttl, who maybe had a bit too much control over stuff behind the scenes at the club. So when he goes, there's just a huge vacuum to fill. But there are players there that I think can be really excellent Premier League players for a long time to come. I mean, that would be my concern for Southampton, is that I don't see the likes of Lavia, Ward-Prowse, Bellicott-Chap, even people like Sulemana staying. I think they're going to be off straight away, which leaves you with a pretty skeletal first team side. Yeah, they'll have some money, some parachute payments, and they're still a big club, so they'll have more money than most in the Championship. But as we've seen before, it's not an easy division to get out of, certainly not first time round.
No, I agree. I think there'll be one of those. Sometimes you see teams go down and they start the first game of the next season. You're like, oh, that's the team that went down. Yeah, they actually look quite good on paper here. And I think they might be quite a different looking side. I mean, probably the big question is where James Ward-Prowse will go if he goes. But, you know, from a player who I think you thought might have been a Southampton lifer, as long as they're in the Premier League, it does bring up a nice question.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would begrudge him leaving the club. He's been brilliant for them. But he is, what, he's 28, 29 now. Mm-hmm. He is still, certainly in his mind and in my mind, a player that could be in the England squads coming up, could get a Euros under his belt. And I don't think he can do that in the Championship. So I think he probably will leave. And I think there's big, big teams that could do with him. I'm looking at the likes of Liverpool. I'm looking at the likes of Chelsea even. There are big teams that I think could do with a Ward-Prowse in their side, or certainly in their squad. Would you take him at Spurs?
Yes, in part because Spurs are fairly light in the center of midfield.
Would he start for Spurs currently? I think he would.
Maybe. I think Højbjerg's had a very good year, and Bentancur, when he comes back, is our best midfielder. But right now, he might start. I mean, to me, James Ward-Prowse screams Aston Villa. Like, yeah. It just seems fated. Yeah,
yeah. That's a good shout. Yeah. West Ham? I'm thinking
West
Ham, of Claret and Blue,
West Ham,
aren't I?
Aston Villa. Yeah, you are.
Burnley.
Burnley. You know, very attractive football team these days. Probably could be enticed by the words and management of Vincent Kompany.
I don't think I've ever seen a team change their sort of style of play and their aesthetic as quickly as Burnley. Like RuPaul's Drag Race.
I was going to say, it's like a leopard turn up at a disco in tiger stripes. You just don't expect it.
Just don't expect it. Let's wrap up. We've got a couple of minutes left. Talking about the remaining relegation spots. You said beforehand you think it's probably 2 from 3 teams. So talk me through it.
Well, I mean, this is purely just math, but I think Forest, who are 16th, they're only 3 points out of the relegation zone, but I think they've done enough, because with 2 games left for Leeds and Everton, I'm not sure Ivan will get the two or three points needed to overtake
Forest.
Who have Forest
got in their final two?
Forest, in their final two, I believe, have some interesting fixtures. One being Arsenal and one being Crystal Palace.
Palace away. They could finish that with 0 points.
They could. I think Di Maupassant, Crystal Palace will give them at least a point.
Okay, fair enough. And where do you see Leeds picking up any more points now? I mean, Everton have shown last week at Brighton that they can be a devastating team on the break.
Leeds could I think West Ham and then Spurs, I mean, that could be anywhere between 0 and 6 points. I know that is literally the case, given that's how football works, but
very, I mean, fascinating insight.
Everton, who will be, you know, coming off a Europa Conference game, and Spurs, who, I mean,
well, if you saw West Ham in the game against Brentford on Sunday, they are 100% on the beach. They're not interested in the league.
On the
they're
league
just looking on the they're now just looking at the Europa. Fair enough. I mean, they're safe. They're now wanting to win a trophy. I completely get it. As long as they get through their next leg, they are going to just be hanging out for the rest of the Premier League season. So I can see Leeds getting something there. I can see them getting something against Spurs. Anyone can get something at Spurs at any time. So I think that, I don't know. I agree it's 2 from 3. I don't know what it's going to be. Gun to head, who are you saying staying up?
I think Leeds are going to pull it out. And I think that the odd one out is actually going to be Everton, because Wolves are just one of those teams that I don't think are going to roll over, will make it very difficult for Everton. And then
you said Forest at the start of this. So you've changed from Forest to Leeds.
Oh, no. Sorry, I said Forest are very much on the edge of things, but I think they are fine.
Oh.
I think Leicester are going to be shot. I can't see them picking anything up against Liverpool. Then they've got Newcastle. That's not going to help. And even though they've got West Ham on the last day. So West Ham, I guess, are like, what's the opposite of kingmakers? The jester providers?
Court jester, yeah. I reckon court jester. Pathetic, but, little slug. Begging for attention.
Leicester have been just meandering around looking like they've been relegated for months already. I think that Leeds will just pip Everton, and Leeds will have a bit of a rally. Everton will just slowly sink into the quagmire.
So you're going Southampton, Leicester, Everton, all going down.
Wow. How about you?
Southampton, yeah, I think they're going to.
You think they're down? You think they might be down?
Yeah, confirmed down, and I'm going to agree with that. That yes, they are down. Leicester as well, unless they pick up something at Liverpool tonight, which I don't think they will. I just don't know. I'm going to go same as you. Sod it. I'll say Forest going to stay up despite being a Derby fan. All right, let's go with that. That's all we got time for anyway. Gareth, thanks for joining me. We'll be back same time next week in our penultimate episode of Whistleblowers. See you next time. Sports Social Podcast Network.